Orlo pointed out. If there is any possibility that she might be alive, we must do whatever we can to help her. That was all Yule needed to hear. He tossed the G-Jaw back to Saman with one hand while giving Cord a knife with the other.
She's strapped in pretty good,
he warned us. All we could see of Cord now was one leg, which twisted and pawed as she braced it against the scaffold. A minute passed. We stood, waiting, unable to help Cord, helpless to do anything about the banging, booming, and metallic screeching noises resounding from the gates and walls of the Consent high above. Finally, Cord gave a great heave and tumbled half out of the door. Yule reached in for the second heave. Like a rafting guide hauling a drowned customer from a river, he brought the geometer out with the full power of both arms and legs and ended up lying on his back with the alien sprawled full length on top of him. Red liquid spilled down around his ribs and dripped through the rungs onto the ground. 20 hands reached up to accept the weight of the geometer as Yule rolled her sideways off of his body. 3 hands, one of them Orlo's, converged on her head, cradling it, taking great care it did not loll. I glimpsed the face. From 50 feet, anyone would have taken her for a native of this planet. Close up, there was no doubt that she was, as Cord had put it, not from Arb. There was no one thing about her face that would prove this, but the color and texture of her skin and hair, the bone structure, the sculpture of the outer ear, the shape of the teeth, were all just different enough. It was out of the question to lay her down on the rocket-blasted ground, still hot and strewn with jagged tile shards, so we looked around for the nearest flat surface that might serve. This turned out to be the empty bed of Ganel's fetch, about 100 feet away. We carried the geometer on our shoulders, quick-stepping as fast as we could without dropping her. Suramaltha, the Consent's physician, met us halfway and was probing the patient's neck with her fingertips before we had even set her down. Ganel, thinking fast, got a camp pad rolled out just in time. We laid the geometer down on it, head on the tailgate. She was in a loose, pale blue coverall, the back sodden with what was obviously blood. Suramaltha ripped the garment open and explored the body with a stethoscope. Even allowing for the fact that I can't be sure where the heart is, I hear no pulse, just some very faint noises that I would identify as bowel sounds. Roll her over. We got the geometer on her stomach. Suramaltha cut the fabric away. It was not just soaked with blood, but perforated with many holes. Maltha used a cloth to swipe a mess of gore away from the back, revealing a constellation of large, round puncture wounds, extending from the buttocks up halfway to the shoulder, mostly on the left side. Everyone inhaled and became silent. Suramaltha regarded it for a few moments, mastering her own sense of shock, and then looked as if she might be about to deliver some clinical observation. But Ganel beat her to it.
Shotgun blast, he diagnosed.
Heavy gauge, anti-personnel, medium range.
And then, though it wasn't really necessary, he delivered the verdict.
Some SOB shot this poor lady in the back. May God have mercy on her soul.
One of Maltha's assistants had had the presence of mind to shove a thermometer into an orifice that she had noticed down where the legs joined. Body temp similar to ours, she announced. She has been dead for maybe minutes. The sky fell on us, or so it seemed for a few moments. Someone above had cut the shroud lines of the parachute, and it had collapsed on our heads. Startling as all hell, but harmless. Everyone spread out and got busy, pawing, dragging, stuffing, and wadding. There was no coherent plan, but eventually a lot of avowed came together in the middle of the plaza, corralling a huge wad of chute stuff which they pushed and rolled up the steps of the temple to get it out of the way. When it was obvious that there was an oversupply of these chute wranglers, I turned back towards the probe, meaning to go and give the people there an update. My inclination was to run, but soldiers in head-to-toe suits were coming down the ramp in force, and I thought that running might only excite someone's chase instinct. Orlo and Saman were examining an artifact that had been in the capsule, the box that Cord had seen on the occupant's lap. It was made of some fibrous stuff, and it contained four transparent tubes filled with red liquid. Blood samples, we figured. Each was labeled with a different single word and geometer writing, and a different circular icon, a picture of a planet, not Arb, as seen from space. Soldiers yanked it out of our hands. They were all around us now. Each sported a bandolier loaded with what looked like oversized bracelets. Whenever they encountered an avout, they'd yank one off and ratchet it around the avout's throat, whereupon it would come alive and flash a few times a second. Each collar had a different string of digits printed on its front, so once they had captured a picture of you, they would know your face and your number. It didn't require a whole lot of imagination to guess that the collars had tracking and surveillance capabilities. But as sinister and dehumanizing as all of this was, nothing came of it, at least for now. It seemed that they only wanted to know who was where. Frau Landascher acquitted himself well, demanding, firmly but calmly, to know who was in charge, by what authority this was being done, what law covers alien probes, by the way, and so on. But the soldiers were all dressed in suits made for chemical and biological warfare, which didn't make engaging them in dialogue any easier, and Landascher didn't know enough about the legal procedures of this time and place. He could have mounted a fine legal defense 6,400 years ago, but not today.